you kind of have to look for the general essence of the house. Like, what was the architect trying to do? Can it feel transitional without being a cold modern box?
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Devers, and this is Clever. Today, I'm talking to Amanda Lee and Taylor Hahn of House of Rollison. House of Rollison is a woman-owned design-build property development company based in Los Angeles, led by Amanda and Taylor, partners in life as well as partners in business. House of Rollison carries out avant-garde and innovative housing projects through transforming forgotten-about places back into real living spaces. Their mission is to imagine tomorrow's habitats, and their calling is to preserve a home's soul. They design homes that are aligned with our time and yet still true to their environment. And the results are stunning, warm, elegant spaces with a modernized design aesthetic that still feel connected to their own histories and landscapes. Only a couple of years into it, they've already completed a handful of gorgeous renovations, which you can feast your eyes on at houseofrollison.com. Amanda has a background in ground-up construction, while Taylor has a background in architecture and software development. Together, they complement each other's talents. But the real magic comes together through a very supportive and collaborative dynamic with each other and with their 40-person crew of crafts and tradespeople. No wonder their homes have soul. They're built with love. Here's Amanda and Taylor.
Hi, I'm Amanda. I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm a managing partner at House of Rollison.
I'm Taylor. I'm also a managing partner of House of Rollison.
And we gut and resell houses that have been forgotten about.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The two of you are not only just both in Los Angeles, you're both in the same house and both managing partners, the only managing partners of House of Rollison, correct?
That's true. That is true.
Very true.
It's very much your thing that you built together. So I'm excited to learn all about that. But before we get into your union and all that you do together through House of Rollison, I'd love to know a little bit about you individually before you were a team. Like, where did you each grow up and what did you get into as children and what types of things captured your imagination?
So I'm originally from the East Coast. I grew up in New Jersey and then I moved to the city when I was a teenager. So I mostly grew up in New York. I think a really big inspiring thing for the creativity around building and structures and all of that kind of stemmed from curiosity about building more so than design.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing Appalachian Service Project at a young age. It's through like church organizations and schools, and it's where you go to, you know, just underdeveloped neighborhoods around the United States, and you basically work with a tradesman from each, you know, so we'd have an electrician and a framer and whatever. And then all the kids there are basically kind of the hands and helping, you know, rebuild people's houses.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of a fun way that started my brain kind of working in that way.
So as a kid, you got to see not just like the guts of homes and how they're built, but you got to partake in actually helping to construct them.
Yeah. And it was a really cool experience.
Did you have a specialty? Did you like the finished carpentry or the rough framing or?
Oh, I wasn't good at any of it. I was bad at all of it. But, you know, I was actually probably more so the HR. I just loved to hang out with the families and kind of learn about them and what they wanted and why or how they got involved in kind of that process. And that was really fun and just really gratifying.
Okay, Taylor, what's your story?
I'm from Sonoma, so Northern California. Growing up, we were just constantly in nature, playing in the rivers, running around on the beach. I'm one of five, so there was always some sort of activity going on. Painting, drawing, that was always where my interests led me. Architecture as well, always very fascinated by that. My stepfather was actually in construction, so I had exposure to that industry at a pretty young age. I was always surfing like the original Zillow just for houses. I just found it fascinating and entertaining.
What branch of construction was your stepfather in and what kind of exposure did you have?
Residential. His whole side of the family, North Bay Construction, that was their whole thing. So I was always running around to job sites and seeing what was going on there.
So when the teenage years hit and you're kind of hitting that age when the angst and rebellion is kind of coming forward because you're forging your adult identities or trying to figure out what it is that you want to steer yourself toward. What was happening for you and how were you expressing your creativity?
Oh, we were both really angsty teens.
Were you really angsty teens? Okay, I'm so into it. Tell me, where did the angst come from? How did you express it and what were you doing with it?
So actually it's really interesting because my dad worked in computer chips, which is like, I don't know anything about computer chips. I don't even know how to work a computer half the time. And my mom worked in corporate America. So it's really funny because my grandfather was an artist and Taylor and I both have a strong affinity for art and kind of always have from when we were younger, but we didn't know where to put it. So we were just, you know, bouncing off the walls and, you know, being annoying, rebellious kids, our poor parents. I can't even imagine. But, you know, being really into like, you know, music that was probably terrifying to our parents and all kinds of stuff like that. I used to go to like punk rock shows and my mom was like, what in the world is this? And what is on your belt? Why are there studs on that? You know, just.
Taylor, what was your angst? What flavor of angst were you expressing?
There's many different phases.
I feel like you're much more like of an introvert.
Definitely. Yeah, I would express myself through, you know, painting. I was very into art classes and whatnot and just being submerged in nature. I loved it. That's where I found my peace.
So can you tell me about how you met each other?
This is a good one.
Oh my gosh, it's hysterical. So as I went through my eras and types of building and construction and all the things, I was actually a director of development for a company. And we worked between New York and California and a little bit in Colorado. And my friends were like, Amanda, like you focus only on work and going out with your friends and nothing else. Go on a date with somebody. And I was like, no, I'm so awkward. I'm never going to talk to people. Like, you know, and also gay women are terrifying. And I didn't know how to kind of do that. Mm-hmm. So it was really funny because I had mostly just been in like kind of back-to-back long-term relationships and was never really like a dater, you know? So my best friend made me download a dating app. I think it was like Hinge or something.
Shout out to Hinge.
Yeah. Right? And it was, Taylor was one of two people that I matched with and we literally spoke for a month straight before we'd met because she was in
I was out of town for that month in Oregon visiting my family.
And then I deleted the app and I was like, I'm going to meet her and we'll see what happens.
How long ago was this?
I think like four years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And Taylor, what's your side of the story when you got matched with Amanda on Hinge and you were out of town? What was happening?
I mean, I think at that point, neither of us were looking for anything more than casual, or at least we weren't able to admit that. So we were just chatting back and forth, and then we eventually decided we were going to meet when she had a business meeting in town, and I was back in Berkeley. That's where I was living at the time. I was actually doing some software, and then we decided to meet up one day, and I was extremely nervous. I liked her too much, so I didn't want to do the whole meetup thing. And then
we were so nervous. I like literally chugged a glass of wine before she got there. So
at that point, I wouldn't go on formal dates. And she was like, I'm taking you to dinner or we're not meeting up. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to go and like get drinks or like do some, like, you know, I don't know. It just
be casual.
I wanted to be able to sit down and like have a conversation. And she was like, okay, Miss Formal. And I was like, ooh, this is
But I loved
tough.
It. I could. It's not. Yeah, it wasn't what I was used to at all. So I could tell she would challenge me in that way.
So how did you learn that she would challenge you? What was the chemistry like on that first date? And was the restaurant a good one?
We never made it to dinner.
We initially met at that hotel that she was staying. We got like a few appetizers and then went to a wine bar. But it was on the premise of doing an actual date. Yeah, we just talked. But she was just very different than anyone I had ever talked to or dated. She was on the phone when I first walked up, actually, and was on an important business meeting, which I later found out she was talking to her friends. But I was like, who is this woman? And then we ended up not leaving each other's side for the next week. And then we went on a road trip across the country. And then the pandemic happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was crazy.
That's kind of an intense beginning. I'm so fascinated. I have another couple that I'm friends with, and they always say, if you want to test your compatibility, travel together. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think road trips are also a really fascinating way to travel because there's so much time to just chat and see the same scenery in the car. How did the road trip go? And would you say that really solidified the partnership in some ways, or was it more the pandemic? You're stuck together.
It was actually, I think the timeline was that we stayed in San Francisco. I ended up being there for a week and we spent like every day together. And then I had to go back to New York for work. And I asked her if she would fly to New York, and I never drove my car in the city. So I was like, and drive it back to California with me. So she flew in. And she finally agreed reluctantly to go on this like cross-country road trip with me, which was just, you know, a long shot excuse to spend more time together. And the day that she landed, they announced the pandemic.
Oh my God. Whoa.
Isn't that crazy? So
we actually started living together. Was it 2 or 3 months?
It was like 2.5 months. We moved into my parents' beach house with my brother. So that's Whoa. How our relationship started.
Whoa.
Yeah. We all got real close real fast. We have matching tattoos.
Thankfully, yeah, we do.
Oh, so funny. Yeah, it was really crazy. We ended up going to Delaware, Rehoboth Beach.
Never been there in my life.
And Taylor and I were upstairs. Patrick was downstairs. We didn't know each other like that well. But at this point, I think we'd known each other for like 2 months. And then we were living together and not allowed to speak to anyone else but each other.
Well, I think that could have been a make or break moment, the pandemic, when you get that much togetherness.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like it was probably a good thing for the two of you, because here you are. I'm wondering if you can talk to me about how you discovered your collaborative dynamic and your mutual love for construction and renovating. How did that come up? Because at the time, you were doing software when you met, right, Taylor?
Right. So I was consulting for various architectural firms. So I would go to a conference about the built environment and, you know, how technology could advance it. Mm-hmm. So I was learning a different aspect of it. And then your company, Amanda, I started working with them a little bit.
Yeah, you were doing software and then also like a little bit of procurement. So like ordering materials and stuff like that, because Taylor has like a very amazing design eye.
Mm.
It was funny because I feel like for couples, it's so hard for a lot of people to just kind of be around each other and be kind of just, you know, engulfed in each other at all times. And for us, it was like, you know, it's my best friend, it's my lover, it's my partner in life. And it was just like, honestly, so fun. And it wasn't scary. And we didn't argue. And it was just kind of a nice experience and like a little bit of a soft run, kind of working together a little, which was fun.
That sounds beautiful. Did you also learn to compliment each other pretty quickly?
Mm-hmm. 100%. We've always had a really good balance between the two. You know, she excels in places that I don't excel in, and vice versa. I'm very analytical. And so I like scheduling and the logistics and the nitty gritty. And she's very high level and gets it done.
I don't write anything down, and I try to keep everything in my brain, and I just kind of go. I'm full blown Aquarius, but it's been really beautiful. And honestly, who can you kind of go through the process of building a business with that you trust more than your partner? And I think that we complement each other so well, because I have kind of a high level understanding of building and structural building, because my background is, you know, ground up construction. And Taylor's more like artistic and structured and type A. And so the balance between those two and kind of the fusion between those two kind of allows for like so much space to be able to be creative and also play to each other's strengths and weaknesses.
It does sound like a beautiful choreography and a dance that you do together. You had a background in ground up construction and you were working as a director of development. Is this something that you studied in school, Amanda? Did you know that this is what you wanted to go into?
No, I'm like a horrible school person.
Okay.
It's actually really funny because I was so intrigued by the process. I actually moved out to Colorado at one point and got on a framing crew when I was in my early 20s. And I learned about structure by literally doing it, which was terrifying because it was like me and a bunch of men in the middle of winter.
Yes.
But it was a really cool experience. And then I got a job for funny enough, it was a software-based construction company, which is such an oxymoron, but they tried and they failed. And I did that. And that was, I was more so dealing with clients and contracting and all of that type of stuff. Then I was running 3 different markets for a construction firm, and that was all ground up construction.
Okay. That's interesting. Taylor, from teenage years to now, where did you pick up your skills?
I've always been fascinated in a broad range of topics, but the combination of design and the physicality of building and seeing it transform over time, I don't know. The skills just have come over time. I've learned a ton from Amanda, of course, us spending 24/7 together.
Is your design eye something self-taught, or did you study it at any point?
No, all self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
I studied architecture for a little bit, and I did art classes when I was younger, but it was always something that I kind of developed myself.
It's pretty wild. Because like I've been doing this for almost a decade. Taylor's been doing this for a couple years. And she could build anything from the ground up, more so than it's a male-dominated industry. So I'll say most men, but that have been doing this forever, which is pretty wild.
Thank you for that insight, Amanda. I've picked up from Taylor that you have both a love of art and a kind of analytical mind. So that right brain, left brain usually works really well in terms of spatial awareness and building things and understanding the physicality of materials and of tools and flow of space. So I guess it's not surprising at all, but I am glad that you two met and had the pandemic to bond. How long into this love affair did you decide to go into business together? And was that because you found a great property and wanted to work on it together? Or was this a little bit more intentional?
It was not intentional. Well, I had been wanting for a long time to kind of get away from, you know, what I'd been doing and not, you know, anything against that type of structure, but just getting away from working with clients and being able to have more creative freedom. So Taylor and I met with, you know, a group of investors who are kind of struggling to figure out how to design and what to do with some of these older homes. And we were like, let's do one and we'll see how it goes. So we set up our insurance and did all the things, and it was terrifying because we, you know, everything was our choice. Everything was our decision. So we were like, oh my God, what if this tile looks ugly? What if this doesn't go together? What if, you know, you don't have anybody kind of checking and balancing you except for each other? So it was like just all of these funny things where even after doing it for so long, you just question every little bit of it. And we only really had each other to be like, no, I think that looks okay. And then you just keep going kind of through that process.
It was a big trial and error of developing our style specifically. It took a few houses, but so much goes on in a single house from start to finish that your style could change throughout the course of one house and develop and get to the place where we are now.
When was this first project? Was that in 2022?
I today just realized that it's been 1 year since we sold the first project of this series that we were supposed to do, which I thought was crazy. So I guess we had started it about 8 months before we sold it, and we sold it at the end of March.
Wow. So you, and you're like 9, 11, how many projects in at this point? That's a lot in a year.
Well, if you think about it, so it's technically been almost 2 years because that's when we sold it, not when we started it.
Right.
To date, we've sold 8, I think.
And we picked up other houses during that project as well.
Yeah. So I think we've sold 8 and we have 5 on the books right now. That's a lot of houses.
Okay. The first project, as you're working your way through it, it sounds like there's a little bit of like checking in with each other to validate your decisions. And, but also you're kind of feeling your way at the end of it when you like putting the bow on the front door, not that you actually did that, but when you're checking it off, did you know you had something there? Did you feel a sense of reward and satisfaction?
Yeah. I mean, that house, we repainted it twice. I mean, on the exterior, we literally went from white to dark to darker. And, you know, at the end of it, we were so proud of it. We were so excited because it was a, Tail, when was that house built?
It was a 1911 Craftsman.
Yes. I like remember that phrase because when we were done, we were like, wow. Like when we got the house, it was riddled with squatters. There was literally, I've like chased people out of that house with the taser.
Oh my gosh.
Like there were squatters living in the house and it had been.
They would light our lockbox on fire and break in and steal the electricity.
Oh yeah.
We learned a lot in that house.
Yeah. They stole copper pipes out of the basement. There was like just so many crazy things that happened. And when we were done with it, we were like, holy crap. Like it's such a stunning space and it feels new without the smells and the, you know. all of the things that kind of come with that age of house, especially with like the distress that it was put on it. And it was really incredible because it was kind of the first time that I realized that everything really is fixable. You just have to be patient with it and kind of let it go through its own process. And I really think it was also the first time for Taylor and I that we realized that we kind of had to let the house be what it wanted to be. If we tried to force it into something, it just didn't work. And we'd have to end up redoing that portion of it. And Tail, we talk about that a lot. It's something that comes up pretty often.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Clever listeners. We're getting excited for New York Design Week in May. This year will be better than ever. ICFF, North America's leading platform for contemporary design, will take place from May 19th to the 21st at the Javits Center in New York City. I'll be there, and I'm excited to let you know how Clever is collaborating with ICFF for Launchpad at Wanted, formerly known as Wanted Design Manhattan, and the Emerging Designer Showcase. Launchpad is an international platform for emerging designers that introduces new concepts and showcases prototypes of furniture, home accessories, and lighting. It is the best place for manufacturers to meet new designers, discover fresh ideas, and potential products to develop. The best of Launchpad winners will be selected by a jury of renowned industry professionals, led by yours truly. And they will go on to be featured in another edition of the popular Emerging Designers Showcase.
I'll be leading the Emerging Designer Showcase live on the Talks main stage, where the 5 Launchpad finalists will have a chance to present their projects to our esteemed panel of professionals. It's always a really good time. So mark your calendars for Sunday, May 19th at 4 p.m. Both Launchpad and the Emerging Designer Showcase are presented with media partners Clever, that's us, and Design Milk, and with support from American Standard and Lumens. Visit ICFF.com to learn more and register to attend. Those are the letters ICFF.com. Come by and say hi. I would love to see you there. Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises. One of the things that really impressed me is that you honor the original architecture while also striking this really beautiful balance of updating it and bringing it into the now while trying not to change its original personality. It's hard to do that sometimes. I think people don't really understand, especially when you're doing a bunch of renovation and you're willing to take out walls and reorganize floor plans. It's hard to stay true to the essence. And that's something I think that you both do really well. So two things. I'm really curious about your most rewarding projects. And then I'm also curious about your creative process in terms of when you find a property, how do you know it's one for you? When you are making choices about how to honor its integrity, but at the same time update it, how do you reconcile that? Like, if you could talk us through your creative process by talking us through a project, I think that would be really interesting. One of your mottos is, if a property has no soul, give it one. Because some properties don't have a soul. Like, they might be in a good location or they might have some good structure. But if it doesn't have a soul, it's going to feel cold and heartless. And so giving it a soul.
A lot of properties have no soul.
I know. Like,
it's really interesting because most people that renovate houses do not do it in one shot.
Right.
Right. So it'll be, this bathroom was done in the 80s. And then this part has like more of an Art Deco vibe. And this, you know, so you kind of go through like this piecemeal and you're kind of taking the pieces apart and then putting it back together. And that's really, I think, what we see. So you kind of have to look for like the general essence of the house. Like, what was the architect trying to do? Like, is this a Spanish? Should it be a Spanish? Is this a, you know, something traditional? Is this transitional? Can it feel transitional without being, you know, a cold modern box? Like, should we add beams to the ceiling? Is, you know, there's all these kind of elements in question. Taylor, I think you would speak better on this, but I think Beechwood is probably a pretty rewarding one. That was pretty wild experience for us.
It was a fun one. Yeah, there was a lot of architectural things about it that were interesting. And then also bringing back in the kind of Spanish revival elements, you know, through the lighting and sourcing the doors and matching the existing doors. But that was a Spanish from the beginning. So I feel like that house already spoke for itself, which is different than some of our other projects. But because it spoke so deeply to itself already, I think it was easy to kind of delve into that.
We were like, okay, this is the box that we are kind of putting it in. But the funny thing about it was really the first time that we were able to, you know, work a lot with the architectural salvages and kind of, I think that house was built in like the 30s. We were super set on buying light fixtures from that time and buying matching the door handles from that time and buying things that were reclaimed that we could refinish. And it was really interesting because it's almost like if you look kind of up at the lighting and kind of around, it feels a little bit like a time capsule, but it doesn't feel drab and it doesn't feel older, and it feels like there's still a freshness to it. And that was pretty cool because we were able to, you know, bring in some like Wallace Neff lighting and add a new iron gate and kind of do a lot of these things with the bones of what were already there without pulling too much away from it.
It's beautiful to hear that because I think so much of this soul that you speak to is also kind of honoring the period in which it was built, but maybe, you know, with a little bit of license, not necessarily needing to be so rigid with it, but making really meaningful choices about all of the objects and fixtures that become the jewelry and adornment of a home. I also think it's a whole adventure in and of itself, hunting for these objects and being able to know when the lighting is a match, like out there in the world of architectural salvage, like finding the pieces that want to be in that home. It's a bit of a matchmaking endeavor and also a little bit of detective work. Is that something that you both enjoy?
Very much so. Yeah.
It's also cool because a lot of the architectural salvages, we've developed such a close relationship with them that they'll let us take stuff out on consignment. And, you know, we're both such visual people. So we have to be like, Tail, hold this up. Let's see if this looks great in here, or, you know, and just moving so many objects in and out of the houses. We put like a 5,000 pound, 10 foot round fountain in the front of that property, which was, you know, terrifying because it was so expensive. And we were like, is this going to look absolutely ridiculous? But it was such a showpiece when you came down that driveway. You were like, holy hell, where'd you get that?
That must be really fun too, not just for the home itself, but to also find new loving homes for these orphan pieces that are out in the world. I firmly believe that objects have energy. And it makes me sad to see orphaned objects that have good energy and they need somebody to help them find their match, their home.
Mm-hmm. We are a zero waste company, which, you know, we do have a warehouse full of tons and tons of things that we should probably get rid of that we haven't. But at the same time, we won't, like, anytime we're taking a house apart and it has, you know, original tile or original toilets and sinks and kind of all these things, we will call the architectural salvages and have their teams come and remove them before we start going through our process.
I love to hear that.
Yeah, it's really like an homage to how it was built and all of those things and kind of its time period. I think it's just so important.
I used to do construction and I would get, you know, some people really enjoy demolition and I do to a certain extent. It's very satisfying when something needs to go to just be able to rip it out really quickly. But I would get really literally upset and sick to my stomach when people would destroy perfectly good fixtures, toilets, tile, things like that when it could have been saved. I know it's a proposition to save those things, but I really appreciate that that's something you're spending your time and energy doing. I'm also really curious about this warehouse. It sounds like an amusement park. Is it organized or is it chaos?
I mean, it wasn't organized.
Yeah. It goes through ebbs and flows.
Are you currently living in a place that you've renovated or is this a project you're living in?
Both. We never want to sell it. So it's our home, but we're currently living through a renovation. So we're very much living and breathing in our craft. It's an amazing property. There's a lot to do with it.
What have you started with?
The carpet, number one. So there's this gorgeous living room downstairs, very big, but it was just, there's carpet throughout. We even have carpet in our bathroom.
Mm. That was a weird thing they used to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole downstairs is done with the flooring. We're doing the laundry room right now. There's a bar, like a funky bar in the living room. It's like a sunken living room with an even more sunken bar.
Mm.
So that's what we're working on right now. And then the kitchen is next. Amanda's building her wine room downstairs. So that's been an adventure as well.
What year was the home built?
50s, actually. 56, I believe. And
it sounds like a mid-century with the sunken living room and sunken bar area.
very mid-century vibes. Original owners, they're a very interesting couple. It was a couple who has, from the little I know about them, they have no children, no family. So when they passed, all of the proceeds went to charity.
Oh.
So it was like seven different charities that were selling this property.
Well, I'm glad that it's in good hands and that you're taking care of it. How hands-on do the two of you like to get?
Probably
throwing
more than we should.
Sometimes.
I mean, a lot of it when we're more hands-on, I think, is more so like in the finishing stages. You know, sometimes you have a bad week and you're starting demo on a house and you just grab one of the hammers and go for it. But
that's my favorite day of the week is when I get to grab a hammer and join the demo crew.
So I understand you're living in a project. You have five more in the works.
Yeah.
In various stages.
Yeah. And we also have a friend, a couple who's a close friend of ours, and they're having a baby very soon. So we decided to help them out too. So we technically have five plus ours plus theirs. It's a little crazy, but we don't subcontract any work out. Sometimes we'll subcontract some license trades, but all of our crews are full time. So we have about 40 guys that work for us full time.
So that's amazing that you're employing 40 full-time trades and craftspeople. I'm really curious about the sort of balance of the trade labor and also your dynamic with them. It's an important thing to make sure everybody who's working on the home, especially if you're imbuing it with soul, they've got to build it with love. So that dynamic is crucial. Can you talk to me about that?
We are so grateful for the group of guys that we've kind of found. And I feel like in this industry, there's this really odd dynamic that normally happens with construction companies where the people actually doing the labor or your foremen or your project managers, they're really looked at as kind of like your grunt and not as like the reason why this company exists. You know, if they didn't have the skills and they weren't able to do the carpentry work and they didn't handle these things with care, I mean, they're the reason why we're able to do this. And I think that they know that we feel that way about them. Every time we sell a house, we have a barbecue with all of us together. And, you know, we spend so much time with them that it's really special. You know, we shower them with gifts and branded House of Rolls and things. And, you know, it's funny because most construction companies are like, oh, I don't want to wear this stupid shirt, but the guys love it. It's really fun.
I love that for so many reasons. I've been on all sides of the equation as a designer, a craftsperson, and trade labor. And so I know what you're saying when you say most construction companies treat their trade labor like grunt workers. And yet tradespeople, they have to be such brilliant problem solvers to actually make an elegant solution out of electrical wiring or plumbing or whatever, especially on an old house. And there is so much skill and experience and expertise that they've built up over the years. And if you honor that and work with it, and they have a sense of pride of craftsmanship and pride of creative license and ownership, and they're working collaboratively with you, then everybody's able to achieve a much more magical outcome than when they're just forced into following a recipe because somebody said, I drew it up, and so you have to do what I drew up, which frequently doesn't make sense when you're in the field.
Oh, yeah.
So that I also think, just as it sounds like you do too, if you're going to be in business with people and work with them day in and day out, they should be family. You know, there should be a mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
Honoring what everybody brings to the table is the only way to get the best possible outcome for everybody involved and to keep people around. They need to feel cared for and respected. So I'm really happy to hear that because I've always felt like, I'm a little bit on my soapbox now, but I've always felt like there's this arbitrary class distinction between trade labor and creative class.
There is.
And it's utter bullshit. It's like ridiculous and it makes no sense and it's completely arbitrary. So
oh my God. It drives me crazy. I mean, there's like a lot of, you know, just from a political standpoint, a lot of things that I don't believe in. And when it comes to, you know, just the classing and how all of that works. And, you know, there was actually a movie I saw recently about it and it would like, you know, blew my mind.
What's the movie?
Origin, I believe.
And it's just about how, you know, societally we class people and it's either by race, it's by gender, it's by sexuality, it's by, you know, so many different things. And if you actually look and unpack that, like, who came up with this crap? You know, like, who decided that? And who decided that you can have the creative liberty to do certain things and other people can't? And, you know, these people are supposed to be laborers. And it's funny because we've gotten a lot of heat from people around us for the way that we pay our guys. And we've stood by that very firmly, that that's non-negotiable, that they're entitled to be paid for what they do and how long they've been with the company. And we've had zero turnover. And some of the guys, you know, started doing demo and they started with no skills. And, you know, you kind of bring them in and you train them and then you figure out what they're good at and what they excel at. And then you kind of push them into that kind of way. And it's interesting because I feel like, you know, so many of these construction companies, they'll get a project manager, all these things, and then they'll lose the people and they'll leave and start their own company. And we're giving these guys, you know, the tools and the space to be able to create and make enough money that they don't need to do that. And, you know, it's comfortable to stay with us. I mean, two of our guys bought new cars this week and they had the biggest smiles on their faces. And we'd like love to see that. And that's amazing. And then you see some of these companies and all their guys have, you know, broken down vehicles and just look disheveled. And you're like, you're doing that. You're perpetuating that in this environment that has nothing to do with who they are as people. You're creating this.
Exactly. And then those people who are not being valued on the job are doing work on homes that you can feel in the energy of that work.
Yeah, 100%.
So I love to hear that you're taking care of your people. And I love to hear about this mutual respect that feels like it's going on. And I also firmly believe that when you have a dynamic like that, more magic ensues. So that's one of the reasons I think your projects look so warm and inviting and elevated and delicious. And there are so many transitions that are just so artfully handled, you know, that that takes real skill in an existing property and old home to manage those transitions and materials that flow into another material with a real kind of artfulness. So it's showing up in your work. You're clearly doing well. You've got more work than you can probably handle.
Yeah.
Now, with all that you have going on and all the magic you're creating, where are the challenges? What are you learning right now? Like, what's giving you a hard time that you know is making you grow, but it still sucks to go through it?
Yeah. There's a lot of things. I think it's also how many we could take on at a time.
Yes, the balance between not burning out, but still taking on enough to keep us challenged and busy and having a good time and our guys the same.
Yeah. What is that magic number?
I think the magic number is 4. We're at 5 right now. But, you know, it's hard to tell because we're also renovating our own property in sections right now and we're helping on our friend's project right now. So like maybe we could do 5. It's just, we just want to make sure that we have like a nice balance between each other and being able to spend time together that's not consumed with work. And also having our projects and being passionate. It's honestly the most incredible part, I think, is also that, you know, coming from ground up, you're staring at the same properties for like, you're staring at the same walls for like a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And with these, we're kind of moving through them and we have so many guys that we afford the ability to be able to move through them pretty quickly without sacrificing, you know, the work because our crews are so big. So it's just keeping it exciting for them, keeping it exciting for us, and also having a sustainable balance between how many so that we keep all of our guys busy and, you know, we leave a little space for ourselves.
Yes. And what do you do with that little space for yourselves? What are your favorite downtime activities?
We love to go on hikes. We have a dog that doubles as a horse. She's huge.
I'm going to need to see a picture of that dog.
Yeah. She's like a big, big baby, you know, and we spend a lot of time with friends and family, which is really nice. I think we've finally convinced my parents that if we build on the lot next door that we also own, that they'll move out here. Taylor's family is up north. We have friends come and stay with us a lot because the views are amazing and it's enough house that we can all kind of stay here together and not feel like it's crowded, which is honestly something that, yeah, is so special.
It's such a joy to have that.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to have people come stay with you is so nice.
Yeah, I've never understood people with big houses. And then, you know, we bought a big house and we were like, oh, okay. I mean, it's terrible to clean and do all those things, but it's great for everything else.
So what is on the horizon for House of Rollison? More? Or are there different types of projects you want to take on? Or what do you hope for in terms of the health and growth of the company?
I mean, I think we found our sweet spot. I don't think we'll try to exceed this price point too much because it feels like that middle of the market.
I mean, yeah, I think this is a very manageable price point for a large group of people. I don't ever want to do anything too crazy. Maybe pick up a passion project where I'm not the most concerned about not going over budget. I think that would be in a lovely thing to do, which Amanda always makes fun of me for.
Yeah, Taylor wants to do a, she calls it a, her vanity project. She's like, I want to do a house that we blow our whole budget just to know that we could sell the house and break even and have it just be this like showpiece. And I'm like,
not to show anybody else. I would just love to be able to have less restrictions.
That'd be fun. We also want to do like a beach house for ourselves or
we looked at land in Mexico late last year. That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. And it was funny. We took a poll with our guys and we're like, who wants to go down to Mexico for, you know, 6 to 12 months and build a fun property? And they're all like, I'll do it. And then we were like, wait, but how are we going to do this? How are we going to divide that time?
Yeah, that plan went to the wayside real quick.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, the properties are like our babies. You can't just like leave them and expect them to be fine.
Yeah.
But there's so many questions and kind of moving changes on a day to day. But honestly, I think that it sounds crazy because this price point is still crazy, but it is kind of the middle market in Los Angeles.
And when we say this price point, we're talking like, what, 5 to 8 million?
We're normally, yeah, like I'd say 4 to 8 million.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think your kind of entry into the market is at that, I would say, you know, 1 to 2 million range. And those are hard to do because, you know, being able to find properties that are inexpensive enough when you buy them to be able to make profit on the exits really hard. And we're very meticulous with what we put in homes. We're not going to put in like, you know, some Home Depot rinky dink, Amazon, you know, whatever, because it's going to bite you later. And, you know, mm-hmm. it'll say a lot about, you know, our brand. So we really try to kind of keep in that middle of the market where it's still affordable to a lot of people, but at the same time, you still have the flexibility to be creative. And, you know, they don't sit on the market for a long time because there's enough people that can buy them.
And do you prefer working in this manner as opposed to, let's say, working for a client?
Oh, my God. Yes. If I can help it, I'll never work with a client again.
Amanda's very, very much against it.
That makes sense. It's hard.
It's really hard because a lot of people don't know what they're asking for and they don't know what's possible.
Right. So much of it is education and managing expectations. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, I love this tile, install it. Actually, I hate that tile, take it out. And you're like, oh my God, like we just wasted all this money, all this material, and, you know, all this time. And just that kind of process, I think is, I don't miss it.
What's on the future for Amanda and Taylor? You two personally, outside of work, what do you hope for your union, your lives, your individual lives, your life together?
Oh, we're engaged.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're trying to figure out how to have time to plan a wedding. The thought of that just is crazy to me, but we'll have to figure that out at some point here soon.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're planning on a long life together, and that's very exciting. Congratulations to both of you, and congratulations on building what sounds like a really fruitful and dynamic business that is more than a business. It's an extended family, and it's a creative output, and it's a reinvigoration of homes and their souls. And I think that's important. Rather than tearing them down, I think these homes have earned histories. Mm-hmm. And if you can honor those histories while also giving them a new life, that's the best.
Yeah, we kind of give them their life back.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today, for sharing your story, and for speaking with me.
Yeah, thank you so much. We so appreciate it. And it was so nice just spending some time and chatting with you.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. For images of Amanda, Taylor, and House of Rollison projects, and a transcript of this episode that includes links, head to our website, cleverpodcast.com. While you're there, check out our resources page for books, info, and special offers from our guests, partners, and sponsors. And sign up for our free Substack newsletter, which includes news, announcements, and a bonus Q&A from our guests. If you like Clever, there are a number of ways you can support us. Share Clever with your friends, leave us a 5-star rating or a kind review, support our sponsors, and hit the follow or subscribe button in your podcast app so that our new episodes will turn up in your feed. We'd love to hear from you on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. You can find us at Clever Podcast, and you can find me at Amy Devers. Clever is hosted and produced by me, Amy Devers, with editing by Mark Zurawinski, production assistance from Alana Nevins and Anushka Stefan, and music by L1011. Clever is a proud member of the Surround Podcast Network. Visit surroundpodcasts.com to discover more of the architecture and design industry's premier shows.
That's my favorite day of the week, is when I get to grab a hammer and join the demo crew.